Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Heather Bosch. Another Saturday of hands-off demonstrations around the country protesting Trump administration policies. That demonstration in Washington, D.C. earlier this week, Jeff DeMere gathered with other business owners in Seattle to talk about the impact of tariffs, including the 145% tax on goods from China.
We have a container that's right now sitting in China. That container would cost us $300,000 of extra tariffs, given the 145%.
Immigration is also a flashpoint. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court temporarily blocked the deportation of Venezuelans who are being held under an 18th century wartime law. CBS legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum.
Clearly, the Supreme Court is of the view that illegal migrants, even those with possible gang affiliations and criminal records, are entitled to some judicial review, due process, and sufficient notice where they're being sent. But that doesn't necessarily mean that after receiving some due process, the Supreme Court would permanently halt their deportation.
Russia's Vladimir Putin declares a brief Easter ceasefire in the Ukraine war, but the BBC's Sue Montgomery says there is skepticism in Ukraine.
Ukraine says Russia is still firing artillery at its forces on the front line, accusing Moscow of lying about the truce. A member of Ukraine's parliament, Lisa Yasko, said the Russian president was trying to gain favor with the White House.
Usually during this kind of holidays, especially religious, like Christmas and around New Year time, it never stops Putin.
There's no sign Israel's letting up in the war on Gaza. Reporter Linda Gradstein has the latest from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
In a recorded statement, Netanyahu said that Israel has no choice but to continue fighting in Gaza and said he will not capitulate to murderers, referring to Hamas. He said that Hamas had rejected an Israeli proposal to free 10 living hostages in exchange for a 45-day ceasefire. The prime minister spoke as the Hamas-affiliated Gaza Health Ministry said Israeli airstrikes had killed 90 people, mostly civilians, in the past 48 hours.
In Oklahoma City today, ceremonies marked 30 years since a bomb destroyed a federal building in what remains this country's deadliest act of domestic terrorism. 168 people, including 19 children, died. The bomber was tried, convicted, and executed. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. A nonprofit is working to help the farmers who lost federal grant money, Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
The Honor Farmer Contracts Act would order the United States Department of Agriculture to resume paying farmers from previously signed agreements. The Michael Fields Agriculture Institute is one of more than 350 organizations that have signed on to a letter of support to Congress. Ryan Martin, the executive director, says federal cuts have impacted both their network and their organization.
There's also a lot of legal and operational chaos. So we're sort of stuck navigating these legal gray zones around signed contracts. My part-time job right now, unfortunately, has been canceling contracts and laying off contractors, and we've had to lay off several staff.
The act would require the USDA to unfreeze all signed agreements and contracts, make past due payments quickly, and prohibit the agency from canceling contracts unless there is a breach of contract. The sudden cuts blindsided farmers across the country. Hundreds of farmers in the upper Midwest region participate in USDA-funded programs that pay farmers for serving their communities. Clint Bland, owner of Bland Family Farm and Farms of Illinois.
This funding has far more impacts than just paying one farmer. All this food was going out throughout the communities that we were serving to disadvantaged folks who needs food. And then it was also helping the business, and everything was just kind of flowing around. It kept the money right here and helped out the community.
Bland says the uncertainty has forced him to make operational changes, such as staff cuts and modifications to planting strategies to mitigate potential losses. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear for tonight, a low in the low 30s. Increasing clouds for tomorrow, some showers possible in the afternoon and evening, high mid-50s. Still some rain around Monday morning. Mostly cloudy for Monday afternoon, high upper 40s to 50. Right now it's 53.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we'll talk about the price of oil with Mr. Global and what that means for consumers. Hour number two, we'll talk about organ donation. I hope you join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to Hour 2 of the Civic Media Spotlight. First up this hour, we'll go to a segment from Matinair on Air. And this week, Jane and Greg welcomed on Deborah Cronmiller, the Executive Director for the League of Women Voters in Wisconsin. She joins the show to talk about the SAVE Act, a voting bill that would make it significantly harder for some in this country to cast a ballot. It was passed last week in the House, and although it still awaits a vote in the Senate, the bill is already having an impact.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We do have baseball action tonight. Tigers at the Brewers. The broadcast starts at 6:05. You can listen to the game on terrestrial radio. On WRCE in Richland Center, WISS in Oshkosh, WRJN Racine and Kenosha, WCQM in Park Falls, and in Hayward, WBZH. The crew hosting the Tigers tonight. The game starts at 6:05. We are joined by Deb Cronmiller from the League of Women Voters. Deb, we've had a lot of listeners coming in with questions for you, so it's going to be a busy couple of segments, but good morning and thanks for making time for us. How are you?
Well, good morning and thank you for having me. SAVE Act is a big deal, let's talk.
It really is. So the SAVE Act passed in the House last week. This is something that was in Project 2025, in case people are not familiar, because yes, they are instituting things in under the Trump administration that were in Project 2025. But one of the first questions we got was from a listener I will call Jane, for example, so that we don't have to use her name. So here is her question, Deb. If a woman has a valid passport with both her maiden and married names on it, is this enough documentation to prove I am who I am? So say, for example, my name is Jane Ann Matinair Clooney. Just as an example. Jane Ann Matinair Clooney, but my birth certificate says Jane Ann Matinair. Would that be enough for me to bring to my polling place, and would they accept that?
Short answer, yes. The SAVE Act, as it passed the House, indicates that there are three sets of documents that will enable you to prove citizenship. One of them is a passport. So as long as you are holding a passport, you will be able to vote. The other two are your naturalization papers, if you are naturalized, and passport and birth certificate.
Okay.
Got to have a birth certificate. So, but keep in mind that though that sounds on its surface, okay, you know, we all had a birth certificate. Most of us maybe have a passport.
If we're naturalized, we know where our naturalization papers are. Should be a no-brainer. Tribal IDs will no longer count. Tribal IDs do not state your birthplace. So now a member of a tribe in the state of Wisconsin and across the nation will have to subsequently prove where they were born. And, that may or may not be easy for folks. Somebody who has lost their passport or has lost their birth certificate, maybe through a natural disaster. Maybe their parent had it and never gave it to them. They just don't have their birth certificate. So we think about the exceptions to the rules. And the SAVE Act, beyond just having these three very limiting pieces of citizenship proof, it takes away other intrinsic voting rights. For instance, in Wisconsin, we can register to vote online. The SAVE Act specifically will disallow that, so there's no more online registration. You have to present in person to your clerk one of those three pieces of documentation to be able to ensure that you can register to vote. Every time you move, you will have to do that. So now let's suppose you live in a rural Wisconsin county. Your clerk doesn't maintain regular office hours because she works very part-time and works out of her kitchen. How are you going to, as a senior perhaps, moving from senior independent living to senior assisted living to senior nursing living? Each of those moves, your address changes. Each of those moves, now you will be compelled to go to your clerk's office and show your new address and your proof of citizenship.
And that would hold, Deb, even if I'm going to be staying within the same county. Just with the change of address, that is going to be enough. That you change address, doesn't matter if you move, if you're staying in the same county, you're staying in the same city. If your address changes, you have to show up in person to re-register again.
Whereas right now, say I live downtown in the city of Madison and I'm in a high-rise apartment building and I'm on the second floor, something opens up on the 10th floor and I want it, so I move up there. Right now, I just have to inform the clerk that I moved to a new unit number at the same address. In the future, I would have to go to the clerk's office to show that I have moved to this new address and again present one of those three pieces of citizenship proof.
Well, and the other thing too that I'm hearing from you, Deb, is, you know, a lot of people don't have their birth certificate, the one with the raised stamp on that, and people don't have passports. Granted, the argument might be, well, let's just get your it's your birth certificate. You can go get one. That costs money. That means in order to vote, you have to pay for a document. If you want a passport, that's even more expensive. That is, and it's a time-consuming process because you have to go apply, get a picture, send it in, wait, get it. And then you spent money on this in order to vote. That has been said before. We'll say it's a poll tax.
It's quite exclusionary. There's no questions about that. My friend Jay Heck over at Common Cause Wisconsin yesterday put out a piece that I found to be very interesting. He did some research here in the state of Wisconsin. And according to his numbers, 3,269,361 individuals in Wisconsin have no passport.
Yep. Say the number again, please.
3,269,361 individuals living in Wisconsin do not have a passport. So all of those now will be forced either to get a passport or to make sure they have a copy of their birth certificate and the other ID that would be necessary to accompany that birth certificate. So this is in addition, in Wisconsin, our ID laws and proof of residency requirements, they don't go away. This is on top of. And so it will be more onerous for, you know, half of the state's population, essentially, to maintain their eligibility to vote. He also indicated that there are 1,316,546 married women in the state of Wisconsin. And those women, without a passport, without access to a birth certificate, without access to naturalization papers if they're naturalized, would not be easily registered to vote. They're going to have to go through the hoop of getting a subsequent piece of citizenship proof to make sure that they can register. Now, keep in mind, I don't want to like be running with my hair on fire here. If you're currently registered and you do not move, you're good to go.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many people who are transient. You know, think of our military families. Think of, you know, older people who are moving, you know, at their aging and they're moving from one kind of facility to another kind of facility. Think of young people. You know, you live maybe in two different kind of campus housing units. Then you move to your first apartment. You live there a year or two. Then you move to a second place. Maybe you buy a house in a couple of years. At each of those junctures, you'll be forced to go into your clerk's office and present your proof of citizenship. And this is just, you know, and in my mind, it's a means, a way to prevent eligible voters from easily accessing their voice, their vote by, you know, being an eligible and registered voter.
Absolutely. If you're just joining us, Deb Cronmiller is here from the Wisconsin League of Women Voters, and we are talking about the SAVE Act that passed in the House last week. That will still have to move on to the Senate and get approval in the Senate, correct, Deb?
Absolutely. Yes. And the League of Women Voters, if you go to our website and many other voting rights advocates websites, you will find information on how to contact, in Wisconsin, our two senators, Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson, and let them know that we do not think it's a good idea for this to be passed by the Senate. And the Senate has the opportunity to stop this piece of legislation from becoming law. And but the Senate has to hear from members in Wisconsin,
yes,
members in every state of the union, that these additional requirements, this, attempt to suppress the vote, this is not what Americans want. We want the access to the ballot.
And the unfortunate truth for some is that there is no evidence of widespread voter fraud. None. Wisconsin taxpayers spent over $2 million that we paid to Michael Gableman to hunt down all that fraud after the 2020 election. And what did he find? Oh, wait, zippo. None. Zero. There is no reason to increase these restrictions on voting except to stop people who might not vote for them.
Well, and that was the thing that I wanted to mention, too, is that while this is a nonpartisan discussion, in my opinion, because of its effect, this will affect people who voted for Donald Trump, Kamala Harris, Jill Stein, Bernie Sanders. It'll affect so many people. We are going to see individuals at the polls in the coming years scratching their head, confused, not knowing what, because like we've said before, not everybody has every time, every minute in the hour to listen to us and talk about these things. So it's important to be informed right now. And that important point to say is if you're registered and you voted, you're good right now. That's good to know.
We're going to continue our conversation with Deb Cronmiller on the other side. We have another listener question for you as well. Deb and Jack, I see you on the line. Hang on. We'll take you when we return. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay close.
Matt Nair on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday mornings from 10 till noon. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In recent months, Milwaukee health officials have uncovered significant lead hazards in city schools, mostly due to lead-based paint. Several schools have now been closed as the problem has been found to be more widespread. In late March, city officials formally requested help from the CDC, but in doing so, they learned that the CDC's entire lead program had been eliminated by Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. This is a major problem.
Children in the state's largest city are being exposed to lead poisoning at their schools, and the Trump administration is not only refusing to provide assistance, they are eliminating the entire lead program that would help in cases like this one. Now, state and local officials must step up to do something for these kids, since Trump and RFK Jr. are gutting federal support. Milwaukee's children deserve better.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to a segment from the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie welcomed on Representative Karen DeSanto, who shares her journey from being a circus clown to being a political leader. She also highlights her tenure as executive director of the Boys and Girls Club and its impact on her legislative work.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. This half hour, we're talking with Wisconsin Representative Karen DeSanto. She represents Assembly District 40 out of Baraboo. We've been talking about education, Representative, and I am apoplectic would be a word that we have somehow decided to vilify teachers and believe Robin Voss's lies. Like, I don't get it. He gave an interview about, I don't know, 2 months ago or so, where he said, we've made a generational investment in public schools. No, you didn't. You, Robin Voss, and Scott Walker architected the most massive defunding of public education in Wisconsin's modern history. It's just on both scale and percentage wise. And these improvements that Tony Evers, Governor Evers, has been able to make in partnership with Democrats in the assembly have been simply to staunch the bleed. Now it's going to be even more complicated if Trump is successful in dismantling the Department of Education. It's going to be even more complicated for schools to get the funding they need to support students that voucher schools can turn away and discriminate against, which includes students with individualized education plans. Right. Do you know someone who is on the spectrum, a kid that has special needs? Guess what? They don't have to be accepted to voucher schools. If we voucherize the whole damn thing, who's taking your child or the love or mentor or see in church or in the grocery store? Who's taking care of that kid? Thank you for bringing this up, Karen, because I don't get it. I do not understand.
I can see it. Right. None of us do. And I love that you are right on the money. There are so many things that I just think the people do not understand what is truly happening. They don't understand that our public schools physically write a check out of their general fund to these private schools to support these kids, that these private education systems don't have the same standards and criteria that our public schools are required to follow. And you're right, especially our kids with individualized learning programs, right? So anybody, sure, they can go to any school they want. They send them that check. And then you know what happens? They don't have a service because they are not required to have a speech pathologist.
Correct.
Or an occupational therapist or a reading specialist.
Nor do they have to take the same testing standards or do the same reporting or come up with a reading and literacy plan for kids that are behind. And so, you know, like you got Doge running around with a bunch of post-pubescent boys that know nothing about government, searching high and low for claimed fraud, waste, and abuse. I got an idea for them. I'll tell you where there's a bunch of leakage of tax dollars that are getting misspent with no accountability and no auditing. Voucher schools. There are no standards. There are very low fiscal accountability. There's no nationalized system of auditing these things. You want to be concerned about ineffective government programs? Look at voucher and charter programs.
Follow the money. Follow the money. So here's what I've heard from my constituents that have been, it's hard to have a young person or a child in your family that needs extra help, right? It's hard. It is difficult on parents, especially single parent families. So when these schools come around, they said, hey, you know what? Your son could do a real good job over here at my school. Come over there. Of course, parents are like, thank you. We need that support. We need that respite, right? Then what happens is little Johnny goes over to that school and they don't have the supports that he needs to thrive and to be successful. So they say, oh, mom, I'm so sorry. But Johnny isn't doing well here. He's probably going to have to go back to his other school. But they keep the money.
Right.
So all the money for that child stays with that school. So Johnny goes back to public education, and now they have to, by law, give him the supports that he needs. So now we're running a deficit, and this is what I'm saying. Now we run deficits. All our schools are experiencing that exact scenario.
And it's worse. It's harder in rural school districts.
Absolutely.
Too. It's the bigger your school district. So like Milwaukee, they at least have scale. They can absorb some of that. But you move into those more rural districts, and it's a real hard situation for folks. We got a couple of our loyal listeners. Let's take one of their comments or calls. We've got Ruth from Eau Claire, a new-ish caller. Hello, Ruth. Please say hello to Representative DeSanto. What is your comment or question this afternoon?
Hello to both of you, and I appreciate you. And the guest. And my daughter says, me too, someone who went through special education and really benefited from it. And I certainly want other young parents to benefit from that. I am calling, though, that I'm looking for another voice. I'm looking for, like, the hope, the direction, embracing what we have. I know there's a lot to react to right now, but it's so reactionary, and I'm just...
Oh, wait. I'm so sorry, Ruth. We lost you. Let me give you some hope. Karen DeSanto is now in the Wisconsin Assembly. We have fairer maps. We are going to continue to have fairer maps in the state of Wisconsin because Susan Crawford was just elected to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. We have a chance coming up in just a couple years to replace an ideologue on our Supreme Court with someone who will follow the law, that understands we all deserve equal protection under the law. Every day is an opportunity for us to speak up, not just to react, but to advocate for the positive change that we need to see. We have a governor who cares deeply about these issues, who's trying to invest not just more in education, but more in children's mental health. Mm-hmm. Representative DeSanto, with our last minute, what do you say to Ruth out there to give her some hope about moving forward?
Absolutely. And Ruth, thank you. Don't lose hope. All the things Maggie just mentioned are right on fire. We do have a pathway. And one of the first bits of legislation that your Assembly Democrats put forward is the Lowering Cost Improving Lives package. That includes creating food for all kids, lunches. And I mean, if you pare it down, it's just simple, basic facts, simple, basic needs. Food for all kids, boom, makes a better school day. Expansion of the homestead tax credit, great for families, lower income families, and last, lowering prescription costs for all things so you can get the prescriptions that you need. But that is what our Democrats are doing for our state.
Thank you so much, Representative Karen DeSanto. We're going to take Maryland Senator's comments about Abrigo Garcia next.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
CBS News Brief. Another round of hands-off rallies across the U.S. today.
Take that, take that.
They're protesting Trump administration policies like tariffs on imported goods and immigration crackdowns. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court took action in the case of Venezuelans who are being detained and are facing possible deportation to El Salvador. CBS's Willie James Inman.
The court issued an order temporarily blocking new deportations under the use of a wartime law from northern Texas.
The high court wants more time to consider the case. The Oklahoma City bombing was 30 years ago today, and ceremonies were held. Matilda Lermer survived when the explosion rocked the Murrah Federal Building.
There's a lot of PTSD that is there, and it never goes away, so we need each other.
168 people died, including 19 children. CBS News Brief, I'm Heather Bosch.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Bucks lose to the Pacers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks losing game one of their playoff series to the Pacers in Indiana, 117-98. Although Giannis Antetokounmpo led the Bucks with 36 points, the Pacers did a good job from being a playmaker and getting assists. And he didn't get much help from his teammates, Brooke Lopez. Kyle Kuzma had a combined 4 points at the half. Damian Lillard talking for the first time after suffering that blood clot.
It was a little bit scary. You know, I think I've had a couple of surgeries in my career. You know, I've had things that I've had to deal with, you know, ankle or knee, Achilles, calf, whatever it might be, you know, but those are all things that you go to rehab, you know, you deal with it like that, you know, like an athlete would. So, you know, I'm thinking that's what I was going into. And then you see you have a blood clot, and obviously that's a thing that can affect your life. You know, I'm just happy to be on the other side of it.
Baseball, the Brewers and the A's, game two of their 3-game series tonight at American Family Field. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear for tonight, a low in the low 30s. Increasing clouds for tomorrow, some showers possible in the afternoon and evening, high mid-50s. Still some rain around Monday morning. Mostly cloudy for Monday afternoon, high upper 40s to 50. Right now it's 53.
No more mold. No more damage. No more slipping and hurting. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a never-clear glass-treated door. BCI Bath and Shower. Interest-free financing options. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. While corrosive democracy news from Washington continued this week, state news ranged from good in Delaware and Mississippi, mixed in North Carolina and Pennsylvania, to downright ugly in New Hampshire. Voting Rights Lab reports the Delaware Senate advanced SB 2 and SB 3, constitutional amendments allowing 10 days of early voting and no excuse absentee voting. Legislative versions of both bills passed last year, but the Delaware Supreme Court found that the state constitution didn't enable them. The General Assembly must pass them again next year for them to be adopted. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ordered Mississippi to redraw state Senate districts for DeSoto County, which it found violated the 1965 Voting Rights Act by diluting a majority black section of the county, according to Mississippi Today. State officials in North Carolina found fewer issues among the 5,000 military and overseas voters than the Supreme Court candidate Jefferson Griffin claimed, but the highly questionable post-election review of voter eligibility continues. Pennsylvania Attorney General Dave Sunday appealed a federal court ruling directing county officials to count otherwise eligible mail-in ballots without a date. The New Hampshire Senate advanced SB 213, which would require voters applying by mail for an absentee ballot to enclose a copy of their birth certificate, U.S. passport, or naturalization papers, almost certainly disenfranchising otherwise eligible voters. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Milwaukee Film Festival program director Kirsten Larson and Tim Sowers from the Overture Center in Madison discusses their new lineup. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. We go now to a segment from the Todd Ulba Show. where this week he welcomed on State Senator Sarah Kieski to give us an update on what she's accomplished in her first 3 months in office. Thus far, she's been fighting to proactively ban hedge funds from buying up houses and jacking up the prices, a situation already occurring in Milwaukee.
Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Tunnel Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 34 minutes past the hour of 12 noon on this Thursday, April 17th, 2025. Zummer's on the board. Many thanks to Green Bay Mayor Eric Genrick for being our guest last half hour. Cannot wait to get up there next Friday for the draft. And very excited for our next guest as well from a part of the state that I'm familiar with, South Central and Southwest Wisconsin. She is the new freshman state senator for that area. We welcome her back to the program. Sarah Kieski joining us from her office here in Madison via StreamYard. Senator Kieski, thanks for coming back. How are you?
Oh my gosh, I'm doing great. Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Well, it's great to catch up with you once again. You've been in office now for a little while, and I understand that you've...
Three whole months.
and look at this, only 3 months onto the job, and you're doing something that seems foreign, at least to some elected officials these days, holding office hours and going out and actually meeting folks. I understand you've been on the road around your district a lot this week. Tell folks a little bit about that and what you're hearing from your constituents in South Central and Southwest Wisconsin.
Sure. So I've had 5 listening sessions, and that's been in April and a bit in March. So I'll talk about that a little bit. And then this week, I've been in Reedsburg and Richland Center and Plains and Poinette, Portage, and I'm going to be in Lodi the 28th of this month.
28th,
right. So a Monday. Yeah, Monday. Just trying to really listen to the voters, our constituents, about their concerns. This week, I've been in Adams Friendship. I was doing a school reality day. I helped them volunteer at that, which was really like an experiential thing, teaching them financial literacy. So that was really fun.
Wow.
I was in Sauk Prairie, their school district yesterday. They were doing, teaching the kids about manufacturing and then trying to show them all the different nuances to manufacturing, not just being on the assembly line, but also having people that are doing the inspections, people that are doing the accounting, people that are doing the marketing, and just showing like kind of the vast array of options for that. So just really fun things. I've also been to Common Threads today, which is providing services for constituents that have neurodivergence. I was at Pathways yesterday in Baraboo, learning about their homeless shelter. So just really like finding out all these beautiful things that are happening in the district, and just so proud of the people that are doing all these programs. So it's been really wonderful to be able to be out there.
Well, I admire you that taking the time to go out there and actually hold real office hours and to meet with your constituents. There are so many, as we know, great stories about what makes Wisconsin great. What are the concerns that you're hearing as you just, you know, have lunch on main streets or whatnot, or you're talking with people at office hours? What are the top one or two concerns right now you're hearing from people in Wisconsin?
Yeah, prices and uncertainty. I would say those are the two things. Uncertainty has been really a really major like cloud over everything. People are seeking just some clarity about, do you know what's going to be happening at the federal level so that we can understand what's going to be happening to us here in our backyards? Do you know what's happening with Medicaid? Do you know anything about Social Security? I hear that they're closing the Department of Education. How's that going to affect our schools? Do you know Meals on Wheels for ADRC, if they're going to do something with the funding from the national level? So everybody's really just kind of pins on needles, honestly, just kind of, I don't know how my life is going to change. And I'm really concerned because it sounds like everything is kind of maybe touched in some way. And then the prices, you know, I'm concerned about prices of childcare and housing and food, and then seeing tariffs be talked about in the news and just going, well, how's that going to affect me? And, you know, I hear, you know, maybe the farmers aren't going to be able to sell some of their product and how will that affect the prices in the grocery store. And so really people are understanding that there's a big web here and there's impact on really everyone in different ways, but no one's probably going to be unaffected. And people are trying to figure out, well, how do I plan for that? And the reality is much of the time I have to say, I don't know yet. Most people don't know. And everybody I ask that's above me and has a higher pay grade and more information, you know, from everybody from Mark Pocan to Tammy Baldwin, when I meet with them, I ask them what they know. And honestly, they're doing their best to advocate for their constituents too. But there's a lot of just unknown.
We are talking to State Senator Sarah Kieske, who represents the 14th District in the Wisconsin State Senate in South Central and Southwest Wisconsin. Senator Kieske, I know one of the things that you have been trying to provide some relief or maybe protection is a better word, is this new bill in the State Senate and State Assembly, I guess as a Senate bill, dealing with prohibiting hedge funds from acquiring single-family homes in the state. That sounds complicated to me, but I think at the end of the day, one of the things that we hear about, I know you have as you travel around the district, people are just very concerned about the cost of housing, whether it's how much we're paying for rent, how much, you know, we're able to, younger people, can they ever afford to buy a home? Yeah. And there's something that people don't know. I think they're making that uncertainty worse, and you're offering a piece of legislation to address that. Tell us about it, please.
Sure. So, yeah, so housing is a big concern, and prices of housing and or rentals has been a major issue that I've heard about. I also have six kids, and they're ultimately hopefully going to be able to be homeowners someday, because we know that's how we build wealth, or at least a way. And right now, the possibilities of that are growing more and more limited. So hedge funds, for most people probably know, but I'll just share, hedge funds are basically organizations that pool together really wealthy people. So they have all this wealth pooled together, and then they can make major investments in things. And then it's the risk is kind of more limited. And so we're saying hedge funds, we're asking to prohibit them from buying single family homes in the state of Wisconsin. Now, this isn't widespread yet, but we're really trying to make sure that it doesn't become widespread. We're seeing it in Milwaukee area in particular. And what we're learning is that these hedge funds are oftentimes buying them and then either turning them into rentals, which then, you know, helps them determine, or they can determine then rental prices, which oftentimes then go up, or they sit on them. So they're not usable for families to buy. They sit on them until the housing market changes, and then they can, you know, make an income, a profit on it, and or turning them into like Airbnbs. And so really then taking away the opportunity for people to become homeowners, and again, help with our families build their economic wealth and have the stabilization of economies in the local area. Because if we have families there long term, that is a stabilizing force for like schools, et cetera. And so really just trying to help make this opportunity more available versus some of these things that are helping to restrict it.
Yeah, I think this is really interesting. I hadn't heard about it. That's interesting news about this happening, starting to happen in Milwaukee, because I've heard about it at a larger scale, places like Las Vegas or Phoenix, Arizona, or out in L.A. And again, to your point, for our listeners, we're not talking about a couple of neighbors that say, hey, let's buy one or two houses and have an Airbnb business. You're talking about multimillionaire, not billionaires, coming in and saying, we're going to buy up every house in the Dells. That's available, and nobody's gonna be able to afford these things, and then we're gonna jack up the prices, and it really is destroying communities.
Yeah, I mean, if you recognize that they can come in, they don't even have to necessarily sight unseen, right? And right away, they can offer higher than asking price. I mean, and so they have an unfair advantage, and it creates a bit of a monopolistic practice potentially. And so we're just trying to protect our communities. I have a lot of small communities in my district, and I want to just make sure that there's something like this so that it just can't become a big problem versus having to address it after the fact.
Yeah. And I think, again, this has
if you, we saw this. I mean, I was working the state capitol for former state senator Dale Schultz when Walker was governor, and we saw this with up north in the mining areas and up in Mellon, where foreign countries, the Chinese, other places were coming in and trying to buy huge amounts of swaths of farmland that it was never going to be farmed, and then they wanted to use this for development and jack up all the prices around there. So this is not foreign, pun intended, to Wisconsin. We've seen attempts like this before.
Right. And so there is now a ban for that happening as far as farmland with Chinese investors. And so it's just, again, it's just trying to make sure that we're doing things proactively to be mindful of the people that are in our state and trying to protect really middle class individuals rather than having those that are the wealthiest have all the benefits.
And to me, Senator, this seems like something, this bill seems like something that should be bipartisan. Because whatever side of the fence we are on politically, most of us say, look, we don't want people from, you know, hedge fund managers from L.A. or San Francisco to come into Wisconsin and buy up all of our housing. You know, I mean, this should be a Wisconsin thing, should it not?
Yeah. And I think it is, as far as when I've even talked about it to people in these listening sessions, when I've gone to places talking about it and or put it on social media and have put it out there. Generally, people are very honest about their feelings about things that I say or do, good and bad, right?
Right.
This one has been very popular across the board. So I was really excited about that. So when I presented it and had co-sponsorships, I was really excited to see bipartisanship of it because I just thought really... Maybe it's naive of me, right? But I'm eternally hopeful that it would be because it just makes good sense and it's common sense. It turns out we do have 30 co-signers on the bill, which is fantastic. I'm very proud of that. But only one of them is a Republican in the assembly. And so we're going to call it bipartisan. We're
going to call it these days.
Exactly. So I'm calling it bipartisan. I'm really excited about it. I want us to really push for it. It just got its Senate bill number, which is 208. Mm-hmm. And it's my first one to really do as the lead. Yeah. And so I'm just really excited about it, really proud of it. And I'm really hopeful that we get it passed and on the governor's desk.
Well, congratulations. I hope people will call up their elected officials across the state in both houses and urge support of SB 208, sponsored by Senator Kieske. Senator, about 2 minutes left here. Another bill that you're a co-sponsor of, which means a lot to me, is designating the Tom Deal Memorial Highway. Tom Deal is you tell folks, I got about 2 minutes left.
No, do him justice. I knew
the guy through politics, other places. And he was a guy that gave to both sides in terms of money because he loved the Dells and loved tourism. It was a job creator, took over kind of the Tommy Bartlett empire after kind of, learning it at the knees of Tommy Bartlett. And he's just a great guy for tourism. And it was a part of what made Wisconsin great. He passed away this last year.
Yes. I never got the chance to meet him, which is a real unfortunate thing because it sounds like he was just a man of just goodness and innovation and I was privileged enough to meet his daughter, Jill. Mm-hmm. And so that was wonderful. And then I just went to the annual tourism for their dinner in Sun Prairie, and I got to meet his wife and some of the siblings and the grandchildren. And they really spoke so highly of him, and it was really lovely. And so I'm really proud to be co-signing on this. There's going to be a stretch of highway that is going to be in his name, and just so he is remembered well. And we just do a great act of making sure those that have served our community in different ways really are acknowledged and recognized.
To me, Tom Deal is the kind of guy that got it because he was a big backer of Tommy Thompson, a former Republican governor. Mm-hmm. He was also a big backer of Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin because he didn't really care what side of the aisle you were on. Hey, if you were for putting money into roads to help people from Chicago and Minneapolis get to the Dells, if you were, he was a great conservationist as well and wanted the areas around the Dells to be preserved for in our state park system, whether it was Devil's Lake or whether it was just recreational areas for camping and hunting. Mm-hmm. He was all for it because he said it's good for the state. It's good for tourism. And so much of our people in Wisconsin rely on others coming in here for our income. And so I really admire you for again, sponsoring this bipartisan bill to honor the late, great Tom Deal. I appreciate that, Senator.
Yeah, well, no, it sounds like I should be enamored with having my name next to his. So that's like, really lovely.
He was a great guy. He really was. Well, we appreciate your time here. Again, Senator Kieski is going to be in Lodi next, April 28th.
Yep. So it's a Monday. It's about a week and a half away.
All right.
Not this coming, but the following.
Yeah. All right. One of our great state senators, elected officials, who is actually going out and meeting with the people. Senator Kieska, we appreciate you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Same to you. Bye.
Our pleasure. Come on back to discuss Republican politics. Why they're calling him Pontius Shimming. I'm not joking around. For Easter weekend, it's Todd Albaugh Show in Civic Media.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from noon till 2. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Heavy rain and rising groundwater can turn your basement into a disaster zone overnight.
Oh no!
A failing sump pump means water damage and expensive repairs. Don't wait! Tri-City Services installs and services high-quality sump pumps to keep your home dry and protected. If your pump is over 5 years old, makes strange noises, or runs constantly, it's time for a checkup. Don't risk thousands in water damage. Call Tri-City Services at 715-423-5840 for a free sump pump inspection. Stay dry. Stay protected. Learn more at calltricity.com.
Don't wait until after disaster strikes. Call Tri-City Services today, 715-423-5840, or visit calltricity.com.
We're not comfortable.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Closing out this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we'll hear a bit from the Earl Ingram Show. In the final edition of their feature, In the Pharmacy with Dr. Omar, Earl's wife calls in and expresses her gratitude for Dr. Omar and his supplement recommendations.
Touch me in the pouring rain, and the moment that you wander far from me, I wanna feel you in my arms again. And you come to me on a summer breeze, keep me warm in your love, then you softly leave, and it's me you need to share.
All right, welcome back to In the Pharmacy with Dr. Omar the Pharmacist on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. Dr. Omar is willing to take any questions or comments you may have. Dr. Omar, how can people get in touch with you?
People can always call at 262-429-9429 or go to wiltopiarx.com.
And Cardi, if people want to be able to now capture all of this great information that we've been able to gather with Dr. Omar, the pharmacist, over the last year or so, how can they do that?
Well, Earl, they can always log into civicmedia.us, check out the podcast on that episode by clicking on the Earl Ingram Show, and also check out the YouTube page at Civic Media, and click on Earl Ingram, and you'll be able to see every episode from day one until today.
Oh, that's great. That's great news. Let's go to Mark. Good morning to you, Mark. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Well, first, a quick question, Earl. On Mondays, is Reggie Jackson your frequent guest?
Yes, he has been.
Okay. The comment I have in terms of health, I just wanted to recommend a book by Jane Roberts called The Way Toward Health. That's all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. You know, Dr. Omar, when you talk about health, and I was talking to you earlier before we came on the air, And I was saying, you know, I mean, I've cut back a lot on meat, man. I used to be a carnivore, man. They just give me some meat, right? Meat. Give me meat. Meat on the plate's got to be meat, you know. And as I've gotten older, my body doesn't agree with meat as much as it once did. And so I was telling you about watching horses and rhinoceroses and elephants and the largest animals, land animals on earth, buffaloes, they don't eat meat. And so when we talk about muscle development, those animals have tremendous muscles and they don't eat meat. And so you are telling me the difference between their bodies and our bodies, and the difference, if you please.
Yeah. So the horse, well, actually, yeah, it's weird that we see the animal kingdom has animals that have like awesome muscles, but they don't eat meat like the horses, but they have kind of digestive system adaptations. Well, they have this kind of, they can ferment in their colons very efficiently, extract the nutrients from the fibrous plant materials. And also they have continuous grazing activity. They graze for many hours daily and are naturally active, promoting consistent muscle engagement and development. There is also different muscle fiber composition. In us humans, when we go plant-based diet, the challenge is like there is incomplete amino acid profiles in many plant proteins, and it's hard for us to absorb these kind of proteins in the beans, in the seeds and the nuts. And that's why replacing with branched chain amino acids and taking protein shakes for plant-based diet people is important. Okay, so this need to be careful dietary planning, because not everyone can be vegetarian based on I want to be as strong as this athlete who is also vegetarian. You have to calculate it, make sure that you get your proteins, you get your vitamin B12, you have healthy gut, because unfortunately I see many vegetarian human beings live with us that eat many processed foods, thinking that this is healthy and it is not. So meat is not the enemy. Vegetarians is a good and great concept and great way of life. We just have to calculate it perfectly and be realistic. And that's why I love pharmacy, because it gives us the tools to look at the science and help empower people with lifestyle change in their medications and supplements to create a better health.
Well, Dr. Omar, as fate would have it, my better half is on the line. She doesn't call, but this is my wife, Allie. You have a question or comment for the doctor?
Of course, a comment. Thank you so much. And Cardi, I love the look on your face when you're looking at that screen like Earl. Yes. Hi, Dr. Omar.
Hi, Allie. How are you doing?
And I'm limited, I already know. But you're... Oh, my God, your pills, your vitamin B, first of all, off the chain. I mean, it was so perfect. I had those little tremors, and you said vitamin B, and ever since, no problem. Your CoQ10, awesome. Your calcium, you know, okay, I'm old, so I needed everything. And you have it there at your pharmacy, and your knowledge is, wow. I'm just overwhelmed. I should have called you earlier. But thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. You know, Dr. Omar is not the end, because you and I will certainly continue to give the life-changing information and knowledge that you provide. I'll continue to tell people about Welltopia Pharmacy. I'll continue to make my treks back and forth to the pharmacy to see you. Until we meet again on the podcast. It's always been great, and it's not so long. It's not goodbye. It's a respite, but we'll be back together soon.
We'll be back. Thank you, Earl. I appreciate
that. Thank you as well.
Thank you, Allie.
That's Dr. Omar, the pharmacist. Dr. Omar, the pharmacist. Love you, man. We'll talk soon. All right. Up next on the Earl Ingram Show, I'm going to give you a chance to get to know who I really am. Up next on the Earl Ingram Show.
The Earl Ingram Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 8. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll review the weekend news, and Jimmy Cuska, Civic Media Sports Director, will be here to talk about changes coming to the WIAA. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Heather Bosch. Another round of hands-off rallies across the U.S. today. Demonstrators protesting Trump administration policies. Brandon Eisen reports from Chicago.
Several hundred demonstrators, their disapproval of President Trump's handling of issues such as the economy, health care, and deportation remains. But some do tell us that they have seen movement in efforts to rein in the president's power.
I think when the senator in Maryland went to El Salvador, that gave me some hope.
We saw Murkowski come out, so I think there's some people that are willing to stand up, but of course they're going to face retaliation.
Brandon Eisen for CBS News Chicago.
The U.S. Supreme Court is temporarily blocking the deportation of Venezuelans who are being held in Texas under an 18th century wartime law. Legal analyst Lori Levinson says this is significant.
You can tell how serious this is for the Supreme Court when they don't have the confidence